This hour program is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Chenny Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon in Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjwj.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WFT and Decatur attorney Bill Favor, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Favor proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employees Organization Union, the GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WFT Community Radio. The Campus Faculty Association at the University of Illinois advocates for academic freedom, shared governance, and a strong faculty voice on campus. CFA is proud to support community radio and the World Labor Hour in support of strong unions. You can learn more about the CFA by visiting cfaillinois.org.
Hello, comrades. You're listening to WEFT, Champaign, Illinois, the mighty 90.1, coming to you from the heart of occupied Illiniwek territory. Today on the World Labor Hour, Saturday, September 3rd, is our special two-hour Labor Day program with Jen White, the newly elected president of the Champaign Federation of Teachers, who will be in our in-studio guest in a few minutes. We'll also have Gus Wood, guest, calling in from Atlanta, Georgia, and a history of Labor Day and much more. Also, Dave Johnson.
Okay, Bill, just to let you know, the views and opinions expressed here, those speakers do not necessarily represent this, the views of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT at 90.1 FM in Central Illinois and webcast live worldwide at WEFT.org. Okay, so yes, I think we'll just go right here to our live special guest, Jennifer White. Thank you for coming on the World Labor Hour today.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for having me.
Okay, maybe we can start just by talking a little bit about your background and stuff.
Sure. This is my 14th year teaching in Champaign at Jefferson Middle School. I went to college at U of I and majored in cell biology. And as I started grad school there and started to TA for Bio 120 at the time, I kind of realized that I enjoyed teaching science more than doing science.
Okay.
So that led me down the path towards teacher certification. And I spent my first couple years up in Rantoul at Ader Junior High. And then, like I said, moved on to Jefferson. I've been teaching science there ever since.
Okay. So what made you decide to run for union president? I know Kathy Mannin was a previous president, and she actually got a position with the American Illinois Federation of Teachers in Chicago.
Sure. I've actually been active for a really long time. Towards the end of my first year at Jefferson, the president at the time, Greg Novak, he approached me. He was our librarian, and he said, "Hey, do you like to plan parties?" And I said, "Of course." And so all of a sudden, then I was the social committee chair for the union. And I did that work for several years, organizing holiday parties and retirement dinners and whatnot. And, you know, once you get going like that, you get roped in for more and more things. And then eventually I became vice president under Deb Furch, working with George Pelham for quite a few years. And then Kathy became president, and I was her vice president as well.
Okay.
And so once she decided to take her position within the IFT, I knew it was my turn. The time was right. I was at that point in my life. My son's a little older. I knew I'd have the time to dedicate for it.
Mm-hmm.
My husband's a retired teacher, so he's very patient, and he has the time to let me do all the crazy work that I'm doing. And okay. Here I am.
Does he help you grade papers and
he does
do
not
class
help
preparation?
Me grade papers, but he was an eighth grade science teacher as well, so
okay.
I bounce ideas off of him.
Okay. All right. Very good. So were you ever a union steward for your building?
Yeah, I was a union steward most of my time at Jefferson.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you know, I had experience both in the building trades and also for 2 years working in a support staff position at Unit 4 schools. And I was basically for Centennial High School, what they call an IEA, they got some weird acronyms and definitions. I can't remember what the name of it was, but it was a union steward.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, there's some interesting cases that come before that you have to go represent people on. I have to say that, you know.
There is always something.
Yes, indeed, indeed. And but anyway, so okay, so now we're going into you've been in contract negotiations for how long now?
Our first session was at the end of April.
Okay.
And so this week, I believe, was our eighth session. And it's actually a process that Kathy and I had been working on for the past 3 years, really, because we had had a three-year contract. And so over the course of the last contract, Kathy and I kept detailed notes of all of the issues that came up and that we thought things that our contract could help address whenever there were inequities across the district. So
mm-hmm.
we kept our running list. And then around December, we pulled together our bargaining team, and we started whittling that down to what we thought might be reasonable. And then all of a sudden, I had a 44-page proposal that might have been a little bit much as well. So, you know, we worked hard. I brought together a larger group and got their input on
mm-hmm.
what they thought our most important issues were.
Okay.
And that's what we took to the table in April.
Okay. Now, you know, it seems like in the last several years, health insurance has been one of the most contentious issues of unions everywhere and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking to you a little bit before the program. You said that that was something that was settled fairly early on, and that you're still waning on you know, narrowing down, you know, agreeing on the actual money. So what's been holding everything up? Because I just read the News Gazette article saying you guys are going to be taking a strike authorization vote soon. So what's the holdup? I mean, what's the contentious issues?
Sure. We were very fortunate to settle on insurance. We made
mm-hmm.
great progress there. We settled on that fairly early because we knew the stress of if people don't make that open enrollment date and all of the paperwork that would need to be done if we wouldn't have settled on time. And so that felt very good to get that out of the
mm-hmm.
way because we knew that was a big part of the package. However, we have a lot of language issues that are still on the table. We haven't actually even talked money much left, much yet
mm-hmm.
because there are so many things that have occurred over the district over the past 3 years that are problems that we see our contract can help address to make sure that our members are treated with respect, that we're just not agreeing on them.
Mm.
And so I can give you a few examples if you'd like.
Sure, absolutely.
Sure. So one of the pieces of language involves librarians, and this is mainly at the elementary school, but our previous contract, when it was written, there were half-time librarians and full-time aides, and their classes were 30 minutes long. And so there was language in there that kind of outlined how many library classes they should be teaching over the course of the day and how much time they had to manage the library. Well, since then, over time, their schedule has changed, and so now they teach 40-minute classes, and they are full-time, but the aides are half-time. And so what that looks like is our librarians are teaching more, and so they can't teach as many classes,
okay.
right? Because you don't have as many minutes in in the day, stretched out. And so all that we're proposing is if you took a four-strand building, which means there's four classes at each grade level, mm-hmm. that would mean there would be there would be 24 classes total that the librarians would need to teach over the course of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our position, that they should have time in their schedule to teach those 24 classes. They should also have time between the classes because it's important to be able to transition while the kids are coming in, whether you're changing grade levels or just changing within the same grade. You need to set up new books, put away old books, etc. And then we also want to ensure that they have time within their day to actually manage the library. Like I said, the aides are half-time, and we know that libraries are really the heart of the school, mm-hmm. and we want our libraries here at our Champaign schools to reflect that and to be a really welcoming community, and part of that is ensuring that our librarians' structure of their day works for them to be able to do those things. And so we know that this works. We've looked at schedules, and what we're asking for isn't a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely within the confines of their normal day, but we've not come into agreement on allowing our librarians the time that they need.
Well, that's so strange because, you know. You'd think that that'd be a pretty easy issue to, you know, to negotiate on, you know, I mean, and settle. I mean, it's not that big a deal to me, it seems anyway.
It doesn't involve money. It involves some creative scheduling sometimes, mm-hmm. but we know that there are buildings out there where this works just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just want to make sure that all of our buildings are held to that same standard.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, you know, I was really surprised to see that you guys, considering the school board, I mean, I thought we had a lot of good candidates elected this time. And so I was really kind of shocked, to be quite honest with you, to see that you're coming to a strike authorization vote. When's that vote going to happen?
It happens on Wednesday.
This Wednesday.
Yep, mm-hmm. this Wednesday.
Okay, 2 days after Labor Day. Wow. Okay, and so then what, so if there's a majority vote to go out on strike, what mm-hmm. happens then?
That'll simply authorize the bargaining team to make the next decision. We do have another session with the mediator scheduled on the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're fully intending on walking in there with good faith and hopefully make some progress that was not made last time. But depending upon how things go, that allows us to make the decision moving forward.
Okay. You know, it seems to me just observing negotiations over a period of decades and stuff, a lot of times it seems like you almost have to show that you're serious about things, you know, that basically they're already decided what they're going to settle on, but they want to make you like fight and scrap for it, you know. It almost seems like this is what this is in the case. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, but
it seems that way to me as well. You know, we put a lot of effort into explaining our proposal to them. We understand that our board members aren't in the classroom. They don't know the day-to-day grind of working in schools. And so we prepared very lengthy presentations on some of our bigger language items, such as lesson plans and librarians and professional development hours. And we really went through at the table half hour, 45 minutes on those issues, explaining exactly why they're important, what the impact is, why it's a problem right now, hoping that that would show them that we were serious about them. These aren't just things that we're making up.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds nice to have. These are in direct response to issues that we've had, and yet they're not taking us seriously because they're not even talking about them.
Okay.
They're just rejecting.
My wife was a secretary at a local grade school in Unit 4 schools for 7 years. She still works for the district, but a different position. And she always was, I mean, I don't know how many times she'd come home and tell me stories about particular teachers in her school, about how much time they put in, you know, outside the classroom. I mean, my gosh. I mean, it's just, you know, it seems like, wow, you know, I didn't realize that, you know.
Yeah, it's a all week job. I just said to my husband, well, thank God there's 7 days in this week for me to get all my work done because it wouldn't happen otherwise.
Yeah. Okay.
And this is a good example of inequities across our buildings. So the first 2 days of school are institute days for teachers, where there's meetings in the building, getting important information about your evaluation, school procedures. There's district meetings. We've got some new initiatives that we're focusing on, and so getting that information from the district. But this year, some of our schools, the teachers on those 2 days got between 5 to 6 hours of their own time in their classrooms to get ready for the students. Yet other buildings, they got barely 45 minutes over the course of those 2 days. So it's just problems like this that come up that
mm-hmm.
we document and we try to make better the
mm-hmm.
next time around. And so it's a real shame that that happens
because
there's a lot of hours put in.
Now, I understand from my information that in the Champaign School District contract with the district that you have a 25-student cap. And that if it exceeds that, they have to actually open another classroom.
That's not exactly in the contract. It's a policy that they try to abide by. Sometimes they go over those capped in different situations, and then they try to adjust things as they go. It's a rather complicated process over there at the Family Information Center, one that I'm sure not all of our teachers understand.
Okay. All right. You know, of course, I've been following what's been going on up in the public schools in Chicago for a long time. You're probably familiar with it, but for those listeners who aren't familiar, that basically Chicago school board is not elected by the voters. It's appointed by the mayor. And there's been this big push in Chicago now for, I think going back 10 years at least, to basically to defund public schools, let them run down, and then bring in corporate charter schools. And there's been all sorts of problems with class size in existing public schools. I mean, I've heard stories about some classes in, you know, grade school, high school, middle school, where there's as many as 40, 45 students, you know. It's like, wow, that I just can't imagine that. I mean, it seems to me like, especially when you're dealing, I don't know, I'm sure each, whether it's grade school, middle school, or high school, there's all unique, you know, problems with that particular age group. But I mean, I just can't imagine a teacher, being able to, I mean, it's hard for me to even imagine with 25 students sometimes. I mean, double that almost. I mean, I'm just glad to hear that this hasn't been an issue, you know, as far as them wanting to push bigger class sizes.
Well, I actually just spoke up at the board meeting about this a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
So the way they made their final decisions on the referendum, making IPA a K-8 school was taken off of the table. And the impact of that is that eventually our middle schools, class sizes are going to keep going up and up and up and up.
Okay.
Because we do have a large elementary, school group that's just working their way towards us. And we see that it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Yet staffing hasn't changed to accommodate for this. We know our middle schools keep getting portables, right? Because we don't have enough space as well. But Dr. Zola, at one of the board meetings recently, she indicated that when she was at Jefferson, that class sizes got upwards of 30 and that, you know, it's fine. It works out. And I took offense to that because I worked for her at Jefferson, and I was always upset when my class sizes got above 30. And the thing that we need to remember there is it's our disadvantaged kids who suffer the most.
Mm-hmm.
The kids who know how to advocate for themselves can get the teacher's attentions. The kids who have good family supports at home can figure things out with their parents at home if they fall behind. But it's our kids that are marginalized that are only going to suffer from that. And it's a shame that that's even a thought, that that's okay, especially at middle school, in my opinion. Those are my babies.
Okay.
But those are the kids that they're going through so much. They're just all out of whack with their hormones, and they're just all awkward and things.
I remember middle school was my worst period of my life, you know, of going through, you know, public schools, you know.
Most people, it seems
like it's that age between children and young adults, and it's a very confusing and, you know, challenging time, you know.
It is. That's why I love them so much. Like, the behavior that you get out of middle school kids that a lot of people think is insane and frustrating, I just look at it and I just said, oh my goodness, you know, you're not a kid anymore, yet you're not quite grown up.
Yep.
And so I have a lot more patience for those behaviors as opposed to seeing them out of younger or older children.
Yeah,
okay. Middle schoolers are just confused.
Well, you know, this brings up, unless you want to talk some more about the contract. Well, let me ask you this. You'll keep us updated on what happens,
sure,
of course.
Thing.
And,
yep.
You know, if things, you know, don't proceed well, are you thinking about maybe basically initiating, trying to get some public support to come out for pickets and stuff?
Yep, we most definitely will.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely help you on that, of course, any way we can. But this seems like you were talking about class sizes and stuff. I mean, this seems like this is a perfect segue into the school referendum that's coming up. You know, my wife works at the Family Information Center, and she says she can't believe the number of new students coming into the district. I mean, from Chicago, from Danville, from small towns in the area as far as way as Sullivan. And she doesn't quite understand what's behind this phenomena. I guess she said that Dr. Zolar said at one point that if the referendum doesn't pass, there's going to be quite a few number of trailers outside all the schools. So do you think that's the biggest concern, or I should say, you know, compelling reason to have this referendum, just to make more, you know, expand the size of the schools to accommodate this new surging population of students?
Sure, I do think that being able to handle the capacity is a critical issue. I also think, you know, the safety of the buildings when we look at our schools like Dr. Howard and Central.
That's my old grade school. They're going to tear it down.
You know, we want our students and our staff to feel safe, and that they're in a building that is respected,
because
these buildings are definitely falling apart and they need some TLC. So I think it's that combination of being able to handle the amount of kids that we get, and also in a space that is, like I said, safe and where people aren't having heat strokes or anything.
Okay. Oh, by the way, as someone who recently sold a house in Bemet. If you look at the real estate on the website about Bemet, basically it runs down the school. And a house that should have gone for $150,000, we sold for $114,000. Mm-hmm. So property owners should be thinking about these things when they vote on these types of referenda. If you have poor schools, then your neighborhood's going to be undesirable and the value of your house will go down.
Well, indeed. You know, I just got some information here from the district. You know, one thing I'm seeing here that, you know, something that we've talked about on the show a lot of times, I see that in part of the plan, at least at Centennial, they're going to construct a career and technical education space. You know, I remember when I went to, you know, middle school and high school, they had a lot of, technical, shop classes and stuff. And I was just shocked when I worked at Centennial for 2 years that they don't have any kind of, technical or, shop classes of any kind, which I just couldn't understand that. I mean, unfortunately, not everyone, wants to go to college. More importantly, a lot of people, in this society, unlike Western Europe, can't afford to go to college. You know, other countries, it's free here. I know when I graduated high school in the mid-70s, tuition at the U of I was like around $300 a semester, which at that time equaled about a week's pay for a union construction worker.
Well, Dave,
but it's $10,000. I mean, that's, you can see how much wages have increased since the, mid-70s. It's nowhere near. I mean, it's like went up, tenfold or more exponentially.
Well, I remember in a lot of towns, the high school classes would actually build houses and sell them.
Yeah.
Another thing too, and what this leaves is a lot of people who are going to end up, going to one of those, DeVry Institute of something like that.
Yeah.
The private sector school.
I mean, it seems like almost like the policy was either you go to college or you go work in fast food, the military, or prison.
Yeah, I do have to say though, Parkland College here, junior college, mm-hmm. is picking up the slack on that largely because of influence by the building trades in this town.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just building trades, but also auto mechanics. I mean, I don't care where our society.
Well, they have a Ford certified training program mm-hmm. there, yes.
But also, with changes in technology, I mean, IT, they could have IT classes. I mean, that's something that's going to be more and more in demand over time. So I was really, really pleasantly surprised to see that.
I think it's an interesting shift even since I first started teaching. Mm-hmm. When I taught in Rantoul, I started 16 years ago, and they still had shop and home ec there in Rantoul mm-hmm. when I started. And then that's been gone for a long time from our schools. And now to see this shift back to that, recognizing that our students need marketable skills mm-hmm. and that not everyone wants to or can afford to go to your typical four-year university. From the teacher perspective, what we're always cautious of, though, is that we just don't want kids to get tracked into something with this idea of, oh, you can't do this, so you should do that.
That it's I've about, heard that
it's
issue.
About
yes.
choice.
Yes.
And it's also, we don't want them, there's some fear of almost training them in too specific of a way mm-hmm. where they, when they do graduate, that they've got this one really great marketable skill, but mm-hmm. then as soon as there's not a need for that anymore, they don't have something to fall back on. Mm-hmm. And so broadening it so that they can be successful even if that defined path doesn't go exactly the way they intended.
That's very well put, because I know there was a big debate back 20 years ago about people being dumbed down, pigeonholed. I used to hear this a lot from, academics and stuff, and I never could understand that, I've been a union carpenter since I was 20, but I also went to and got a bachelor's degree from the U of I in economics when it was still somewhat affordable in the 80s. And, unfortunately I wasn't able to ever secure a job that paid even half of what I did work for 2 years, in the insurance industry. And, I went back to being a carpenter because I couldn't make, even half
the
money.
I have a master's degree in communication.
Right.
And I tried working in, television and, corporate media. And, they won't pay people because it's things that people want to do. Mm-hmm. They can get people to come in as interns. Mm-hmm. That's like, do you ever notice when you turn on the local TV stations around here, that all the people you see, local people you see on the air are pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that means?
Yeah.
That means they ain't getting paid squat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unlike larger cities, other metropolitan areas, right?
Well, and the thing is, you get paid on based on the size of your market. That's what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this market is not just Champaign. This is Champaign, Decatur, Springfield, and Danville.
Mm-hmm.
It's a medium-sized market, but they're paying the lowest market wages. And
okay.
by the way, the smallest market, I believe, is Alpena, Wisconsin.
Okay.
That's always a joke in the, I started out in Alpena.
Okay, so anyway, this referendum coming up.
As far as that goes, how about, do they have media production classes?
You know, that's something, you know.
Because that's not only would be skilled in media production. One reason I am very skeptical of TV news is I've actually worked in TV studios and known the people who do it and the conditions that they work under.
So anyway, this referendum is going to ask for basically $183 million, and it's going to affect Central and Centennial High Schools, Dr. Howard, Edison Middle School, International Prep Academy, Southside, McKinley Field, Franklin Spalding Fields, and so there's a lot of spread off use. But what I was really thought was interesting was that this is going to be expires at the end of the 20-year bonds, and that there's actually this proposal includes the commitment of the Board of Education to form a citizen-led oversight committee to ensure funds are used as promised. You know, I think they really that was a good thing that they thought out. You know,
they definitely have been very thorough this time around. There's been a lot of opportunities for public input throughout the whole process. And I was just reading something in the News Gazette either yesterday or this morning, someone concerned with Dr. Wiegand retiring, you know, what that might mean. And so I think part of this oversight committee will be ensuring that the funds are used as intended.
Okay. All right. And basically, for those who want to know what kind of impact this is going to have on homeowners, basically it's going to come down to a on $100,000 for every $100,000 of market value in a home, it's going to increase the property taxes by $15 a month or $174 a year. And, you know, we've talked about this issue before about, you know, how billionaires and millionaires in the state nationwide aren't paying their fair share of taxes. When Ronald Reagan got elected into office, he ended revenue sharing to the states for education.
Dave, we could have a turnaround in this state if everybody like Bruce Rauner paid their fair share of taxes.
Yes.
That would be the turnaround agenda right there.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
Yes. And, you know, it's just unfortunate, though, that, you know, whether it's a sales tax increase or a property tax increase, this really hits working class people hard, you know, a lot of times. But, you know, it's like we're between a rock and a hard place here, you know. And, but, you know, if you think about it, I mean, if we don't have good schools in a community, and class sizes are oversized, I mean, it's gonna really, like Bill was saying, it's gonna decrease market value of houses, it's gonna make the community less desirable, and it's gonna basically start, causing, you know, basically people wanting to go to private schools. In fact, I was shocked to just find out that there's a new, private university, high school getting ready to open up, on the South Campus, the U of I.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I guess it's going to take freshmen and sophomores to start with. Did you hear about that, Bill?
No.
I
mean, don't they have
It's a charter school. I mean, they have Uni High, you know, but no, this is a private charter high school.
Is there just any kind of theme to it? I mean, is it like
performing
arts or something?
The article I saw on Thursday's News Gazette was they just basically were talking up this new principal, you know, that he can read Egyptian hieroglyphics and speak two languages and, you know, da-da-da-da-da.
Well, okay.
But didn't really go into you know, any specifics of the school, why they think there was a need for this or whatever. But you know, this is all something we've been able to avoid in this community for quite a while, was the influx of corporate charter schools, you know.
And I've always found that in order to manage an organization well, you should be able to read hieroglyphics.
Absolutely.
So I guess what I'm saying is even though this, you know, in a sort of broad, you know, general principle, it's a real shame, that we can't get funding for schools from either federal revenue sharing or, you know, the wealthy paying their fair share of taxes. I mean, it's just something that, you know, it has to be done, I think. And if this doesn't seem, you know, too, you know, bad, you know, too exorbitant, it's not going to, you know, I don't think cause anyone to lose their homes, of course, $174 extra a year for a $100,000 house, you know. So I guess I'm trying to kind of grapple with the whole big picture here. But boy, I tell you, you know, when you start, I mean, I'm already seeing trailers outside of a lot of the schools here.
Yeah, we just added a new one at Jefferson.
Okay. you know, this is just, I mean, it's just, it makes sense to me that, you know, you got, this is going to something we're just going to have to do, you know, that, you know, for the good of the community and of course the kids and stuff. And, you know, it just amazes me. Of course, me and Bill, you know, talk about this a lot about how, you know, some people are just so short-sighted, you know, working people, especially ones that maybe their kids are grown or they don't have kids and are older, saying, what, you know, I don't want to do this because I don't have any kids in the school. I mean, how short-sighted, you know?
Incredibly short-sighted. Yeah. I love living here in Champaign. My son is an eighth grader at my own school. I look forward to him going to Centennial next year. And what I love about it is I really think Champaign just so beautifully reflects like the world community. We have people from so many different backgrounds here, and it's really just such a culturally diverse community to live in. And if we don't start placing value upon our schools and really getting community support behind them, it hurts all of our kids.
Indeed.
Absolutely.
I mean, especially a town with the, you know, the flagship, well, you know, one of the flagship universities of the state. I mean, we would hope that your public schools would, you know, have high, you know, standards to, you know, reflect that, you know. And gee, I can't imagine a time or place where, you know, Champaign-Urbana's public schools would be, you know, a blight, you know, basically where they aren't funded adequately and all that, you know. And it just, you know, doesn't make sense to me. So anyway, I guess, you know, there's another kind of issue that we want to get into more, you know, on another program a couple times here before the November election, of course, is the a quarter cent sales tax for the new jail and everything. And, you know, I understand there's groups around town already putting signs, build schools, not jails.
Yes. And also, as a previous show, one of the hosts on a previous show was calling it the jail tax.
The jail tax?
Not the sales tax, but a sales tax is a jail's tax. By the way, Dave, I think if we're past the midpoint of the hour, we should probably do some announcements.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a quick music break first, and then we'll come back with some public service announcements. You're listening to the World Labor on the supported community radio station, WFT, broadcasting from downtown Champaign, Illinois, 90.1 FM, and webcast live worldwide at weft.org. We'll be right back.
Okay. All right, folks. What I want to do is talk about our public service announcements webpage. Announcements about the community, for the community. It's at weft.org/PSA. I'm not on the homepage, but I'm sure there's a link for it on the homepage. And what happens is it takes you to this interactive calendar where you can see what's going on and click on the activity and get the details. For example, today from 9 to 5 p.m., so it's already happening, is the Hooded Truths Art Show at the University YMCA. It's at 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign. The Hooded Truths is an art display by Candace Hunter, and it's on view in the Murphy Gallery. It's a cornucopia of images, ideas, and personas all swathed in the costume of the 21st century America, the hoodie. In the exhibit, Hunter explores the history of blackness in this country, a history that Candace Hunter describes as a painful and complicated affair, brightened by the indomitable spirit of countless fathers, mothers, teachers, clergy, and artists who continue to shed light on this country's hooded truths. And if you didn't have a chance to get a pen or paper, don't worry about it. Just go to this website and you will see that announcement. Now, a very important announcement today, and this begins at 1 p.m. So after you're done listening to the Labor 2 Hours, you can go to the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center at 202 South Broadway Avenue in Urbana. It's the old post office, folks. That's what it is. Next to Lincoln Square. All right. The Labor of Love concert is a fantastic full day of art and music at the Urbana-Champaign IMC. This event will benefit the IMC and serve as a kickoff for WEFT 90.1 FM's Fall Pledge Drive. Music guests include Americana, folk, country, rap, hip-hop, electronica, and more. For a complete listing, you can look at the Labor of Love Facebook event. Sandra Otten will be displaying her paintings there as well and benefits. Gee, maybe I should have had some photographs printed to display.
Yeah, Bill.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, darn it. I missed a self-promotion chance. The concert is organized by Wefty and local music promoter Todd Durnell, and that's at 1 to 11 p.m. at the Independent Media Center. A WEFT event.
I'm glad to hear there's like a, you know, the cooperation. There has been for quite a few years between the Independent Media Center and WEFT. You know, local alternative media is so important, non-corporate media. Okay, Tuesday, September 13th from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at the University YMCA Murphy Lounge, first floor at 1001 South Wright Street. There's going to be an event in response to local calls we have received about issues of wage theft. The Champaign-Urbana Immigration Forum will hold a discussion about labor injustices and other issues immigrants and undocumented residents face. Join us for this month's forum at the Y, where we'll have a conversation with Chicago labor and civil rights lawyer Sean Morales Doyle and other individuals who work on labor and immigrant rights issues. We'll learn more about how wage theft impacts immigrants and undocumented populations and explore ways to take action in Champaign-Urbana.
Well, Dave, did you know that Krannert Art Museum offers yoga classes twice each week?
No.
Yeah, this Tuesday session is from noon to 1 p.m. and is free and open to the public, though donations are accepted. Join them in Classroom Studio B and learn the fundamentals of Hatha Yoga, seated and standing poses, breath awareness, and relaxation techniques. Participants should bring their own yoga mats and wear comfortable clothing. Krannert Art Museum is located at 500 East Peabody. Yeah, folks, this is not the Krannert place where you go see plays and concerts and such. This is the Krannert Art Museum, and it's at 500 East Peabody in Champaign on the south end of the U of I campus. Let me see.
Okay, I also have some more here, Bill, while you're looking for the other one you're getting ready to have. For 10 years, labor and environmental groups have been coming together to advance policies and programs leading to a just transition. In practice, this means moving towards a sustainable economy based on the creation of green industries and, more importantly, increasing the number of good-paying green jobs. Bringing together major labor unions and environmental organizations, the Blue-Green Alliance has been at the forefront of efforts in support of a just transition, most recently through endorsement of the Federal Clean Jobs Bill. So find out about the work of the Blue-Green Alliance and how you can support it. You can come to Chenny Murray Foundation at 1209 Oregon or Urbana on Saturday, September 17th from 2 to 4 p.m. Free parking's available. That's the corner of Oregon and Matthews at Chenny Murray Foundation, Saturday, December 17th from 2 to 4 p.m. This is sponsored by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice.
Yeah, and by the way, Dave, apparently the Friday Forum is back. If you've lived around Champaign or been listening to this radio station on the internet or whatever, and for many years you have heard the Friday Forum programs. Friday Forum is a series of presentations, speeches, whatever you want to call them, that happens on Fridays from noon to 12 p.m. at the University YMCA, 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign. Coming up on September 9th, will be a Friday Forum analyzing the issues of the 2016 elections this fall. The speaker on September 9th is John K. Wilson, talking about the myth of political correctness, free speech, Donald Trump, and the conservative attack on higher education. For more than two decades, conservatives have accused the left of launching a war of political correctness, censoring opposing views and indoctrinating students on college campuses. Now, Donald Trump has become the presidential nominee, proclaiming himself politically incorrect. What does political correctness mean? And how would Trump reshape free speech and higher education? For more information, visit universityymca.org/Friday space forum. All Friday Forum lectures are at 12 p.m. at the University YMCA in Latzer Hall. You know, Dave, and kind of speaking of that, I've seen videos and read quotes from Donald Trump supporters, mm-hmm. and it's like they're just like, I don't feel like I can say anything anymore. I don't know what to call it. You know, it's like, man, just don't be a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, treat people with respect. If they ask to be called something, you know, go ahead and do it. I mean, that's all people want.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're so afraid and feel so put upon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Boy, I tell you, you know, this election year, it's got to be an unprecedented one for sure. Two of the most despicable people imaginable running for president. Donald Trump, of course, and Hillary Clinton, that's the thing is, they're trying to basically cover up and smooth over her horrible, horrible record. Was her time as Secretary of State, not to mention her time when her husband was president for two terms in the 90s. And, not to mention this recent Democratic primary, you know, election fraud, voter disenfranchisement, the Democratic convention in Philadelphia, you know, just horrible. But anyway, sort of in that vein.
Well, Dave, here's like, just you do not see yard signs, bumper stickers. You know, very few people are excited about it.
Yes.
Out in B Met, which is hardcore Republican territory, I've seen about five Trump signs and one Gary Johnson sign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I just, it's really weird. Hillary Clinton, I disagree with her on many, many, many policy things,
mm-hmm.
but I just don't have the visceral hatred that a lot of people who are not engaged at all in politics seem to have for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't find her to be any more of an exceptional liar and a cheat and
I do.
All around horrible person mm-hmm. than most politicians.
She's just better
than most politicians.
Don't interrupt me.
But most politicians is what I'm saying. I mean,
she's just a better liar. I mean, she's more smooth than Trump. I mean, but you look at her policies, husband's policies, not just when they were in public office, but the Clinton Foundation. I mean, I could go on and on about this.
No,
they're both despicable.
I know they're both despicable, but I don't have the visceral hatred feeling
mm-hmm.
that a lot of people seem to have that I think is really just created by the media.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's a typical politician. That's why I dislike her. She's a typical politician, and she's also because I don't want to seem sexist here, because she's a woman. On top of being a Democrat,
mm-hmm.
because Democrats are always being afraid of being soft on whatever,
mm.
being soft on crime,
mm-hmm.
being soft on communism, and they are much more likely usually to go to war.
Yep, that's true.
You know, and I'm going to tell you right now, If Al Gore would have been president, we would have gone to war with Afghanistan for sure.
Yeah.
And probably would have done Iraq because he would have been goaded into it.
Sure.
By, yo, you're soft on Saddam. You're soft on this. And that's what I'm saying, man. That's a bad thing.
Indeed, indeed. And anyway, sort of in this vein, here's a story of how the elites deceived the American public. 1988 was a milestone year. Up until then, the League of Women Voters impartially sponsored presidential debates. That setup didn't cut it for Democrat and Republicans, which had corporate interests in mind. So they teamed up to create a corporation called the Commission on Presidential Debates. They set out to deceive Americans by using an official-sounding warlike commission in their name. So this is basically a private corporation set up by the Democratic National Committee and Republican National Committee. Think about it. Supposed political opponents were willing to work together for the greater evil. The League of Women Voters immediately withdrew its sponsorship of the presidential debates because the demands of the established parties would, in its own words, perpetuate a fraud on the American voter. Even when Donald Trump ran for president in 2000, he said it was disgraceful and amazing that the Commission on Presidential Debates could get away with keeping candidates out of the debates. In true Trump fashion, he threatened to sue if another presidential candidate's lawsuit to open up the debates failed. Well, we're done with being deceived. We're calling for a real debate, one run by an impartial group that isn't swayed by the cent of the dollar or bullied by establishment elites. And if Jill Stein and Gary Johnson don't get on the debate stage, you can bet we'll be outside Hofstra University demonstrating for justice for the American people. Please join us today. Tell the media you will no longer be deceived. It's time to open the debates and allow all four candidates on stage. It's in our hands. P.S., write a letter to the media today expressing your disgust in being deceived by the Commission on Presidential Debates. I think that in and of itself, plus the whole influence of corporate money. You know, there's certain corporations that not only donate, they sometimes the same corporation will donate to the same, basically the opposing candidates,
well,
to both of them.
And how about your unions?
That's
unions
another
do
issue.
The same thing.
Let's, you know, that's true.
Not as equally, but they do. For example, the building trades unions in the town that Paul Ryan's from, in Wisconsin, they donate very heavily to him.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is his family is also a large union contractor.
Oh, no kidding.
They're basically the Starks.
No kidding. I wasn't aware of that, Bill.
Janesville, Wisconsin. And Paul Ryan always, no matter how libertarian and everything he talks, he always supports prevailing wage laws because it's in his family business's best interest.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets a lot of support from the building trades because of that.
Thank you for sharing that. That's a really interesting insight.
Yeah, came across that a few years ago. I'm sure it's probably the same situation. You know, Local 703, we had a super tight relationship with Timothy Johnson. He was our lawyer.
Yeah.
You know?
But see, here's the thing. As you well know, Bill, unions, I mean, they can't, you know, trying to play the money game with corporations, I mean, they're outspent a thousand to one.
Yeah.
I mean, the real power of the unions is just like in 2008 when President, Canada at that time, Barack Obama was running. If it hadn't have been for the unions, basically their membership going out and volunteering their hours, going door to door in the key swing states of Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida, all of which went for Obama, I doubt if Barack Obama would have been elected president. I mean, there was millions upon millions of volunteer hours donated to that, and that's the real power of the unions is basically if they will activate their members get involved in the community and activate even broader grassroots support. Unfortunately, we know there's a lot of unions that don't like doing that, you know, for whatever reason.
I think it's also an excellent example of how organized people can beat organized money.
Yeah.
And I've been seeing, and now there's still, like you were saying, the influence of corporate money on, now it's on the politicians.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the tide is really changing due to the new communications technology, partly, which is how Trump's using 20th century technology.
Mm-hmm.
He's using the TV to get around, the campaign ads and stuff.
Yeah.
Using the free TV. Other people have been more successful with the internet and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, the unions getting their people energized. Well, part of that would be political education.
Yes.
Right now, I work with people all the time who hate almost everything every Democrat stands for,
mm-hmm.
except for them being for unions.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing.
Some that, are. Some aren't.
That's the only thing that holds a lot mm-hmm. of building trades people
mm-hmm.
in. You know, they're so worried about their guns.
Mm-hmm.
And so on and so forth, at least in these rural areas. I don't know. I'm hoping in the urban areas that the building trades people are a little bit not so much into that.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you, we could have a whole program on this. You know, one thing I want to talk about sometime, you know, before the end of the year is I want to talk about organized labor, national leadership. Organized labor's, strategy of, most of them endorsing Hillary Clinton in the primaries as opposed to Bernie Sanders. I mean, I think that was a huge, huge mistake's an understatement of it. I think it's a betrayal, frankly, of their own members, you know. But anyway, that's another topic for another show. Speaking of, Jill Stein, I guess she's going to be in Chicago this coming Thursday, from 7 to 9. She's going to be, at the Preston Bradley Center in Chicago's uptown neighborhood, from 7 to 9 PM. And, she's going to address roughly an audience of 1,000 supporters. And, her running mate, Vice President candidate Ajamu Baraka will speak as well. So, you know, if you want to get Chicago on Thursday, you can check that out.
Yeah, you really should go see her because there's been such terrible smear campaign against her in recent weeks. I mean, she is not anti-vax. She's she's anti-science. She graduated magna cum laude from Harvard Medical School.
Yeah.
You know, you don't do that being some superstitious person who doesn't
Yeah, and you know what they did was she said that that basically some vaccines, it's questionable whether they're needed. And you know as well as I do, this has been an issue in recent years that the pharmaceutical industry is pushing a lot of, vaccines that really aren't, you know, really are questionable if they're really needed or not, you know, so they can make more money. Now, she, of course, she's not saying, that's what she said, and they took that and said she's totally against all vaccines, you know, like smallpox, et cetera, measles and everything else, which is a total lie, absolutely.
Oh yeah, and they'll be, I'm sure, I haven't really seen it specifically yet, but I'm, would be the GMO situation too. I'll tell you what, I am so sick and disgusted with as an atheist.
Hmm.
And that is these totally reductionist. Mm-hmm. Reductionism is bad. Neil deGrasse Tyson, as brilliant as he is in astrophysics,
mm-hmm.
he is a horrible reductionist and really cannot speak to a lot of issues, social, scientific, and such, because he's a reductionist. What a reductionist does is it forgets that the system is greater than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm.
And reductionism is great when it comes to everything up to chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get past chemistry, you know, your reductionism doesn't work very well because you have way too many variables to account for.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a problem when it comes to genetically modifying animals and plants, because the genes do not work. This is also where the press really disserves people when they come out with a headline: the gene for whatever has been found.
Mm-hmm.
No, if you just alter that one gene, it will does not have that effect
mm-hmm.
without the help of other genes. And then there's also a relatively new science that most people don't know about called epigenetics, where actually things that happen during your life can cause hereditary changes. It's all, I mean, things you can acquire traits
mm-hmm.
that can be and this was found through a study of people populations generations after the Dutch were starved in a basically starved in World War II.
Interesting,
and
Bill.
They found that down the road that had effects on people.
Okay. Well, you want to give a shout out to Xiampa Radio?
Oh, that's right, man. I want to say hi to to those guys and excuse me, in Chicago and Tampa, Xiampa Weed Radio. You can find more about that. Just do a search for Xiampa Weed Radio. It's Anthony and Joe. Joe in Chicago, Anthony in Chiampa. They have a complete live internet radio station. They get most of their material from RadioForAll.net. It's almost like having RadioForAll.net as a radio station on your computer running. They, Joe and Anthony themselves, do a live show on Monday nights, and you can call into it.
Oh, okay.
I just go ahead and do a Google search for Chiampa Weed Radio.
Okay. All right. We're also here. Tune in this Saturday, every Saturday from 2 to 3 p.m. for None Other Sports Show with host fellow worker Neil Parthen on 104.5 FM WRFU and live at WRFU.org. Also tune in this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. for Labor's World View TV at Comcast Channel 6 and live at UrbanaPublicTelevision.org. And this Sunday, September 4th, will be part two of 9/11 Press for the Truth, the story about the so-called Jersey Girls, the wives of some of the victims of the 9/11 attack who basically forced, after a year and a half of lobbying both the press and politicians to finally have a investigation of the 9/11 attacks. Of course, once the investigation was starting, basically after the investigation was over, the families of the victims said it was a complete cover-up and whitewash. So it's a very interesting story. Tune in for that. And also, last but not very least, Labor Day Parade in Urbana this Monday. Labor Day begins at 9:30 a.m., Labor Day money, and this starting at in the south parking lot of Lincoln Square Mall, which is at the corner of Vine Street and Illinois Street in Urbana, and it marches down Broadway south to Washington Street, and then east on Washington to the Brookings County Building, and right to the east of the Brookings County Building is the park where they're going to be having a Labor Day picnic. All are invited to come, and they're going to be having bands, food, children's activities,
but
soft drinks,
no
and beer until 3 p.m.
By eloquent labor orators like you used to have.
I know.
As a matter of fact, Dave, there's something on the WEFT announcement thing that these local labor leaders might want to go to.
Which is?
And that is Intro to Public Speaking at the University YMCA.
Okay.
Being practical, this is Wednesday, September 7th, 5 to 6 p.m., and I am speaking as a former public speaking teacher, gain practical advice on how to identify areas you can improve on your public speaking skills and learn successful strategies for actual improvement, learn from firsthand experience and so on and so forth. But that's at the, University YMCA, 1001 South Wright Street, September 7th. And folks, I'd also like to make a call for volunteers here at WEFT and at the World Hour. Folks, you might have noticed lately that you're not hearing Bob Pelesity on this show. Bob has many, many responsibilities here at WEFT, including his blues programs and doing things like this computer deal.
This is, we're coming out to the second half of the, we're coming up to the second half of the World Labor Hour.
We're coming up to noon.
Yeah.
I want to get back into that though, because
we'll come back to that.
Some help.
Indeed. Yeah, that's a very important
topic. Doing this yet.
Yes. Okay, that's a very important topic. We'll be right back. You're listening to World Labor Hour, Let's Support Community Radio Station, WFT.
I was traveling through Illinois when I was invited to stop and sing at a memorial there in the little town of Mount Olive. Now, who of note in American history is buried in the cemetery in Mount Olive, Illinois? I'll give you a hint. It was a woman. It was the Union Miners Cemetery. Do you have it yet? Mary Harris. Mary Harris Jones. Mother Jones. It's hard for the mind to encompass a life that embraced the presidencies between Andrew Jackson and Herbert Hoover. Why, when Mother Jones was a little girl, there were people still alive who remembered the Revolutionary War. And she died on the eve of the New Deal. Her millinery shop burned down in the Chicago...